I'm Brady Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. I'm not really interested in spending my days doxing people who said horrible stuff about Charlie Kirk's assassination, but for teachers, we'll make an exception. Plus, on that subject, there's a lot being said about remarks that Charlie Kirk made in 2023 about gun control. They're being completely taken out of context, and we feel compelled to play you the whole clip. And congratulations, we're number one, Washington State, back to having the highest gas prices in the nation. And you know why. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Hello, hello, friends. Welcome back to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I hope you all took some time to touch some grass over the weekend. I needed it after last week. I did a live subscriber Q&A with Undivided subscribers last night. And if I seemed off, I was. I mean, I felt borderline depressed the last 5 days of the week. I slept a lot. And I think we're all just kind of sad about the state of the country and where we go from here. I started this thing this morning that I think Jeff Bezos is the one who coined. It's like the 1 hour rule, where you wake up and you do not look at any sort of screen for an hour, which is great for me. And I'm already loving it, even though I've only done it once, because usually I'll death scroll on, you know, whatever, X or whatever it is, and then turn on the TV. And I just feel stressed and overwhelmed by the time I come to you every day. So maybe if I do the 1 hour rule every day, I'll be more peaceful and calm and contribute to lowering political discourse's temperature in this country. Or maybe not. So we said on the show last week on Thursday, like, look, you know, there's a lot of people on the internet who are doxing everyone who's celebrated the assassination of Charlie Kirk, and they're putting their information out there, calling their employers. And frankly, I don't really have much of an issue with that. It's not cancel culture. It's not cancel culture. If you lose your job for celebrating murder, you can lose your job for a ton of reasons. You can lose your job if you're late. You can lose your job if you, you know, don't dress right. There's a million reasons you can lose your job. And I think it makes a lot of sense for any employer in the nation to not want someone working for them who might be a homicidal maniac or celebrate murder. So I don't think that's cancel culture, but I'm just not going to spend my time on, you know, people across the country celebrating the assassination and trying to expose them and get them fired. However, I will make an exception for public school teachers, because that is a totally different beast. And this has been happening a lot since Charlie Kirk was killed. And it is not a surprise. We have so many radical teachers in this country. So it's not a surprise that they, not only on their personal social media pages, but in classrooms, all these stories coming out. I mean, there were a million stories over the weekend of teachers who, you know, had been outed as making these disgusting posts about Charlie Kirk. And even in some instances, there was one crazy story about a teacher playing on repeat the video of Charlie Kirk being killed, which is, if you've seen it, is horrifying for an adult, let alone a child. But there was a story about a teacher playing it on repeat, just totally twisted, and essentially talking to their kids about how Charlie Kirk was a horrible human being. So this is the kind of doxing and accountability that I am all for, because these are people who you send your children to be with them for 8 hours a day. Do you want your kid to go be with an adult for 8 hours a day who celebrates a brutal assassination? No, of course not. And we had a ton of examples of this in Washington State. And the point of me starting the show with this is not to individually shame teachers, although we're going to do a little bit of that, but to make kind of a broader point about the indoctrination that we know is happening in schools and some of these really ideologically unhinged people who are around our kids and the fact that they get so much protection. So a couple of the more prominent stories that have happened, and we got a ton of tips from you guys over the weekend, of course. So at North Creek High School, which is in Bothell, Washington, if you're not familiar, it's south of Seattle, just a little ways, very blue area. The principal there is a man named Eric McDowell, and he posted this on Instagram. Thoughts and prayers. Too bad gun control would have been far, far more effective. He'd still be alive. Maybe thoughts and prayers will work. Oops, nope. So talking about Charlie Kirk being shot and eventually dying. So parents, and I'll give it to parents, because this is a very blue area of the state. It is essentially a suburb of Seattle. They were livid. And they were emailing the school in mass over this. We got a ton of angry parents messaging us about this. And then we got word late yesterday that Eric McDowell is stepping away from his position as the high school principal there in North Creek. Now, he makes it sound temporary, although I'm sure this is just sort of an easy off-ramp for him. I'll read the statement he put out to parents. He said, "Dear staff and families, I'm sending you this because I know there are some questions related to my recent Instagram post, and I want to clear up any misunderstanding or miscommunication. Gee, please, will you do that? I have been against gun violence my whole life. One of my closest friends lost her brother to gun violence in a school shooting. I truly mean it when I say I condemn all political violence, including the cold-blooded assassination of Charlie Kirk. My post, sent as a private citizen on my personal Instagram account from my home, was meant to decry the lack of any forward progress on ending gun violence in America. It was not meant to demean the murder of Mr. Kirk. I truly wish what happened to Charlie Kirk did not happen. He did not deserve to be shot or killed. I truly wish he was alive today. Violence is never the way to resolve disagreements or conflict. I was also not trying to be disrespectful to Christians or anyone of faith. My entire family is Christian. If we are to end political violence, we need thoughts and prayers and more. What we have been doing isn't enough as the violence keeps happening. I'm truly sorry that my post has upset so many. I definitely could have said things differently, and I apologize that the wording was not clear and led to so much misinterpretation." Yeah, that's what, it's our fault. Isn't that just typical? It's our fault. He said, "However, despite the fact that I had no intent whatsoever to inflame the current political environment, I own the impact that my post has had. I will be stepping away as principal of North Creek for the time being to reflect and ensure the focus of the high school is on our students." And then says that he'll be covered in his duties by the executive director of schools. "North Creek High School is an incredible community, and our compassionate and kind students give me great hope for our collective future." I also want to note he's wearing a shirt in his picture that we can't read the entire thing, but it says, it's got a heart, and it says, "Make kindness something." I wouldn't be surprised if it said, "It's make kindness great again." So for someone who cares that much about kindness, clearly, and he says, you know, he wasn't intending to demean what happened or mock Charlie Kirk. Clearly his post is demeaning it. You know, ooh, thoughts and prayers. Oops, I guess it didn't work. And then blaming it on us or parents for misinterpreting the nature of the post. And I also love how they always try to distance themselves as teachers by saying, "It was my personal Instagram. It was my personal social media." Yeah, but that's who you are as a person. And that's the problem. You're responsible, in this case, for a whole school full of other people's kids. And you say that you condemn gun violence or whatever it is, and yet you so callously disregarded what happened to Charlie Kirk. So the statement is absolute and utter nonsense. And then there were some issues with districts as a whole. And I think this fundamentally gets to the heart of my problem with our public education system right now. So the Kent Washington School District, again, if you're not familiar, it's south of Seattle, a little less blue, but still blue. They some parents started noticing that, because of course it was September 11th, right? And the flags were already going to be at half staff. And then the order from the president and from the governor of Washington State was to continue the flags being at half staff through the day on Sunday, so through yesterday. And there were some parents noticing that at Kent schools, the flags were not at half staff. And so that was being pushed out on social media, and the Kent School District got so much blowback, it decided to put out a statement. And it just speaks to the problem with public schools. So they said, "Upholding our values, a statement on flag protocol and ethical leadership." Buckle up for this one. "Kent School District is committed to upholding our core values of equity, excellence, and community. On September 11th, our flags were lowered to half staff in solemn remembrance of the lives and the courage shown on that day, a tradition we honor with deep respect. Different governmental entities have different policies regarding flag displays. Washington state law requires the district to display the United States flag during school hours, except during inclement weather. The law does not require us to lower the flag to half staff in any particular instance, nor when another governmental entity may choose to do so. As educators and public servants, we believe symbolic acts such as lowering the flag should reflect the principles we work to instill in our students and community. When a person has made public statements that conflict with the values of inclusivity, respect, and student safety that we as a district strive to uphold, we may choose not to fly the flag at half staff. Our decision reflects both our compliance with Washington state law and our unwavering commitment to ethical leadership and educational equity. You have to be kidding me. So there's a couple things. The big takeaway from that is basically they're saying that if anyone dies ever who has said something antithetical to our values, we will not lower the flag at half staff for them. What if the president of the United States dies? And surely, if you're saying Charlie Kirk said things and did things that aren't in line with your values of equity and inclusion or whatever it is, surely you feel the same way about President Donald Trump, I guess. So are you really saying as a school district that basically if any conservative of note dies or is killed in any horrible fashion, that you're not going to lower the flags because it doesn't fit your values? And that's the other thing, and I think more fundamental and all-encompassing of this issue. They keep saying our core values. Lowering the flags for Charlie Kirk, it doesn't reflect our core values. Whose core values are those? Is the school district and the families that make it up a complete monolith? That would be really something. Or a 100% of families and people in the Kent Washington School District, liberals? Do 100% of them hate Charlie Kirk and everything he stood for? Clearly not, right? Because that would be really something if we had a whole area where 100% of all the families and the taxpayers who fund the schools hated Charlie Kirk and hate conservatives. So here you have a school and obviously some sort of person in a position of authority for the school district, be it the superintendent or assistant superintendent, who've decided that their personal values are now our values as a district. And that's the problem. And that's the problem that we're seeing in public school districts across the state is they said their values as individuals who are working in a public school system whose salaries we pay. And now if you, even as a parent of someone who, you know, pays to have your child go to that school, pays the property taxes, your values don't matter. You know, they always want to talk about diversity, and it's in here too. Equity, excellence, community, diversity, our commitment. Diversity, except if you're a conservative. Diversity of opinion, except if you're a Christian. Because that doesn't fit our values. Okay. So if the school district gets to operate off of their values and set them as they see fit, can anyone who doesn't agree with those values stop funding the school district? That seems fair to me. And it's wild because, like, the Kent mayor, I love the mayor of Kent, and she's a totally reasonable human being. We've had her on the show many times. And so Kent, the city of Kent is not completely left-wing lunatic, yet the school district has decided that their values will not allow for them to follow an order from the president and from the governor of Washington state to keep the flag at half staff for a measly two more days to recognize the pain that so many Americans are feeling after Charlie Kirk. And that's just indicative of what's wrong with our public school system as a whole. So shame on the Kent School District. And the Kent School District was not the only one. I just had to point out this. We're still waiting for some information, but parents who send their kids to Magnolia Elementary School, which is in Seattle. And if you're familiar with this neighborhood, these are the libbiest of the libs in Magnolia. And these are the, kind of the rich, snooty ones. You know, it's like that 50 to 65-year-old white women who are all like race and social justice and equity and inclusion. We even got complaints from parents in that area of Seattle who said this Magnolia Elementary School refused to fly its flag at half-mast. They got the trans pride flag on there, though, you know? And Nicole reached out and asked, it was such a ridiculous response. Nicole reached out and basically asked, you know, why didn't you follow the state order? Because we're getting these complaints from parents. And the spokesperson said something to the effect of, can you specify what your question is or something like that? It's like,
they said,
mean?
Can you give me context?
What do you mean?
I said,
mean?
There was context? An order to fly the flags at half mast, and your flag was apparently not flying at half mast, and why was that? And she said, can you give more context?
Yeah, what more context do you need?
I was the principal too.
Yeah, I failed to understand what more context you need. So, you know, all of this, like, look, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of examples, and it's not a surprise. We have some really ideologically extreme educators in the state of Washington and across the country. I mean, hell, the president of the National Teachers Union, Randy Weingarten, was sharing conspiracies on social media that the assassin of Charlie Kirk was a right-wing extremist. So, I mean, that just shows you where we're at. So it tells you a lot about our school system, about what needs to happen. And you've got these people and they're indoctrinating kids. And we wonder why kids can, as in the case of the assassin of Charlie Kirk, grow up in a conservative home with religion, a parent who's a member of law enforcement, and then in a matter of years after going off to college, become so radicalized that he assassinates someone. So schools really are the place where so much is going wrong in our country, for sure. And then there's this lack of any willingness to think critically. So a lot of the teachers who are, you know, saying, oh, they don't care basically that Charlie Kirk was killed or even celebrating it, they're referencing comments that Charlie Kirk made about gun control. And I'll get to those in a moment. But for instance, there was an Ellensburg teacher, a kindergarten teacher. And that's really concerning. You've got someone who's around little kids who posted on her social media, I hope some of y'all just weren't really listening to Charlie Kirk carefully, because the alternative is that you actually agreed with the things he said. And that's a tough pill for me to swallow. And then went on this long, long extended rant about his views, allegedly, on guns and gun control. She said, I don't think anyone should die by being shot for any reason. I've screamed it from the rooftops at every single school shooting we've had in this country. My wall is filled with posts over the years, yet all these Kirk mourners in my feed are beside themselves with empathy for a man who incited this very tragedy to befall upon himself, but stay silent when children watch the same thing happen to their schoolmates over and over and over again at school in America. The very same day as Kirk, and 2 weeks prior, but notice these same people had no courage. Christ-like? Seems like politically motivated, selective rage to me. You won't see me crying for the world being short one less person like Charlie freaking Kirk. Good riddance. Yeah, that's an kindergarten teacher in Ellensburg, Washington, which is like a sane area of the state. So a lot of parents upset about that one. So here's what I want to do. Because to me, I don't care if you didn't like Charlie Kirk. What do I care? I don't even care if you're not mourning over his death. There's a lot of people who've died in history who I haven't mourned over their death, either because I didn't know them or I didn't particularly like them. No one is saying that you have to be beside yourself with grief. No one is even really saying that you can't point out some of the things that Charlie Kirk said that you disagreed with. I mean, you do you. Be careful if you're a public school teacher, because that's taking things to another level. The only thing I want from people is to make those decisions and set your perspective on, you know, other human beings based on facts. Just make sure that your opinions have the self-respect to make sure that your opinions are couched in reality and facts. And when it comes to Charlie Kirk's, these controversial statements he's made about guns, they are all way misinformed about what he actually said. And I don't think they've taken the time to actually do the research to understand the point that Charlie Kirk was making. And look, if you listen to the whole point that he was making unedited and you still hate it and disagree with it, by all means, but at least have the full context. So I want to give that to you today. It's going to be a little bit long, but I want to give it to you today. So this goes back to April of 2023, and Charlie Kirk was at an event and he was being interviewed on stage by a pastor. And then they were taking questions from the audience. So there's a short clip from an answer he gave about gun control that seems to be the basis for all of the hateful comments from these teachers all across the country celebrating his death. So here's the short, short clip that's going around and being shared by all these teachers and others on social media.
So we need to be very clear that you're not going to get gun deaths to zero. It will not happen. Right. You can significantly reduce them through having more fathers in the home, yes, by having more armed guards in front of schools. We should have an honest and clear reductionist view of gun violence, but we should not have a utopian one. You will never live in a society when you have an armed citizenry and you won't have a single gun death. That is nonsense. It's drivel. Wow. But I think it's worth it. I think it's worth to have a cost of, unfortunately, some gun deaths every single year so that we can have the Second Amendment to protect our other God-given rights. That is a prudent deal. It is rational. Nobody talks like this. They live in a complete alternate universe.
So that's the sentence that a lot of these teachers are globbing on to you know, absolve themselves of their horrific celebration of someone's assassination is, I think it's worth it to have, you know, a few gun deaths to be able to have the right to bear arms. And so they look at that as like, he's okay with kids being shot and killed at school so he can have a gun, right? So here's what I'm going to do. It's like 3 or 4 minutes long, right, Nicole? But I don't see anyone on the internet putting this out. I see people putting it out as a full text of his answer. But there is audio that exists of his answer. So we went and found it and we pulled it. I'm going to play for you. And I'll post this on social media separately so you can share it when you see those instances of people taking him out of context. Because his full answer was actually very compassionate, looking for ways to reduce gun deaths in schools, realistic ways to reduce gun violence nationwide. But comparing the issue of gun violence to other sorts of deaths that happen in America that we have as a society have deemed are essentially worth the price. So here is the question and Charlie Kirk's full response.
How's it going, Charlie? I'm Austin. I just had a question related to Second Amendment rights. We saw the shooting that happened recently, and a lot of people are upset. But I'm seeing people argue for the other side that they want to take our Second Amendment rights away. How do we convince them that it's important to have the right to defend ourselves and all that good stuff?
Yeah, it's a great question. Thank you. So I'm a big Second Amendment fan, but I think most politicians are cowards when it comes to defending why we have a Second Amendment. This is why I would not be a good politician, or maybe I would, I don't know, but because I actually speak my mind. The Second Amendment is not about hunting. I love hunting. The Second Amendment is not even about personal defense. That is important. The Second Amendment is there, God forbid, so that you can defend yourself against a tyrannical government.
Come on.
And if that talk scares you, wow, that's radical, Charlie. I don't know about that. Well, then you have not really read any of the literature of our founding fathers.
Yep.
Number two, you have not read any 20th century history. You're just living in Narnia. By the way, if you were actually living in Narnia, you would be wiser than wherever you're living, because C.S. Lewis was really smart. So I don't know what alternative universe you're living in.
Yep.
You just don't want to face reality that governments tend to get tyrannical, and that if people need an ability to protect themselves and their communities and their families. Now, we must also be real. We must be honest with the population. Having an armed citizenry comes with a price. Wow. And that is part of liberty. Driving comes with a price. 50,000 people die on the road every year. Wow. That's a price. You get rid of driving, you'd have 50,000 less auto fatalities. But we have decided that the benefit of driving, speed, accessibility, mobility, having products, services, is worth the cost of 50,000 people dying on the road.
Wow.
So we need to be very clear that you're not going to get gun deaths to zero. It will not happen.
Right.
You can significantly reduce them through having more fathers in the home,
yes,
by having more armed guards in front of schools.
Yes. Yes.
We should have an honest and clear reductionist view of gun violence, but we should not have a utopian one. You will never live in a society when you have an armed citizenry and you won't have a single gun death. That is nonsense. It's drivel. But I think it's worth it. I think it's worth to have a cost of, unfortunately, some gun deaths every single year so that we can have the Second Amendment to protect our other God-given rights. That is a prudent deal. It is rational. Nobody talks like this. They live in a complete alternate universe. So then how do you reduce? Very simple. People say, oh, Charlie, how do you stop school shootings? I don't know. How did we stop shootings at baseball games? Because we have armed guards outside of baseball games. That's why. How do we stop all the shootings at airports? We have armed guards outside of airports. How do we stop all the shootings at banks? We have armed guards outside of banks. How do we stop all the shootings at gun shows? Notice there's not a lot of mass shootings at gun shows. There's all these guns. Because everyone's armed. If our money and our sporting events and our airplanes have armed guards, why don't our children?
So that's the full unedited answer that Charlie Kirk gave in 2023 when asked about gun control. Much different much more nuanced, much more empathetic and realistic than the little sentence that these teachers are using to excuse their hatred that says, oh, Charlie Kirk said, I think it's worth it if some kids die so I can own a gun. So, you know, don't like Charlie Kirk. That's fine. Don't mourn his death. That's fine. You know, post that you didn't like his opinions on social media. That's fine. But at least do yourself the service of making sure that they're couched in reality. Do an ounce of independent thought and verification. And they're not. And these are people who are supposed to be educating our children. And clearly they're not interested in educating our children to think for themselves. They want our children to think like they think. They want to indoctrinate them. And that's what's happening. That's what they're doing to themselves. They're being indoctrinated. They see something posted somewhere on another educator's or friend's social media page, and they just share it, and they don't care to really understand what Charlie Kirk said and the point he made. And to me, one of the most salient elements of that is his comparison with motor vehicle deaths. And I don't know the truth of his statistic that 50,000 people die a year in motor vehicle accidents, but I imagine that's probably true. And we know that people die, of course, in motor vehicle accidents, but we haven't decided to ban cars. We've decided that there is going to be a certain cost associated with being a mobile society. And for trade, travel, for commerce, for all of these things, yeah, we've got to be out there on four wheels or more wheels to get things done. And people die, and that is what it is. And so, you know, we're okay with that, but not the same sentiment when it comes to guns. So it's interesting. And people just don't care these days, I think, to think for themselves. So just, you know, at least have some self-respect and want to couch your opinions in facts that you can back up. And these teachers don't seem eager to do that. All right, we're going to continue on with this theme. You remember that teacher who rode in a bicycle competition? What do you call that? A bike race. Bicycle competition. A bike race. And he proudly displayed on his back a sign that said, "This teacher kills fascists." Wow, that's very timely with what's happening now. Well, now he's under investigation for multiple complaints of sexual harassment from students. So, of course, you know, we got to do a follow-up. But first, I am happy to announce that we have a new show sponsor. And look, we can't exist as a show without a healthy combination of you paid subscribers, thank you very much, and our advertisers. And one of the other things I'm just so proud of is that we have so many of Dory's loyal advertisers who have now started advertising with us, and this is one of them. So welcome, everyone. Valentine Roofing as the latest advertiser here on Undivided. Nicole, where are you here? I know you're all clapping at home. Was a longtime loyal advertiser on the Dory Monson show. And so it's just such a great fit for our audience. And they say that their mission as a company is to serve and care for their neighbors with the purpose of creating a long-lasting impact and peace of mind. And I think that that's a mission that we can get on board with as well. And they certainly share some of the values that we have on this show. So if you know that your roof is on its last legs, don't wait until the heavy rain hits and then it's an emergency freaking situation. Valentine will give you a free roof assessment. And here's the best part. If your roof can be repaired, they're not going to try to push you into a new roof. They'll help you repair it. If you do need a new roof, if it's leaking now, Valentine offers a free leak stop. They'll make sure the leaks are fixed so no further damage happens. Then they'll replace your roof, which is really great for that peace of mind. And that's why you see hundreds of five-star reviews on Google, Angie, and Facebook. Fair, honest pricing, low pressure estimates, excellent service. So schedule your free estimate with our newest sponsors at Valentine Roofing by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, call 206-ROOFING and please tell them that you heard about them on Undivided and make sure to thank them for being sponsors of our show and for their longtime loyalty to our friend Dory Monson. So welcome Valentine Roofing as the latest advertisers here on Undivided. All right, so you'll remember this teacher very well. We did quite a few segments on him for saying that he kills fascists, which apparently wasn't concerning enough to get him removed from the Olympia School District, but maybe multiple students offering credible allegations of sexual harassment will get the job done. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. Okay, so you will remember this, at least the picture, maybe not the teacher, but there is a teacher in the Olympia School District who posted on Instagram this picture, holding a little sign that said, "This teacher kills fascists." He said, flying this little flag on my hydration pack during the Leavenworth Sky Race this weekend, might need to print it on a t-shirt next for all my fellow woke DEI educators still showing up with courage and care. Yes, I'm woke. Yes, I teach DEI. No, I'm not sorry if that triggers the willfully ignorant. Ah, yes, we're the willfully ignorant, yet you are a public school educator who feels proud about flying a sign during a bike race that says you kill fascists. And this was, gosh, what, a year ago? This was, maybe not, this was several months ago, if not a year ago when this happened. And of course, we do a ton of stories on the Olympia School District and all the woke, insane educators there. And he's very proudly like, yes, I'm woke. And the school district really brushed this off as like, it's his personal social media. And now when you look at the Charlie Kirk assassination, I mean, one of the bullets said, you know, catch fascist or something like that. And so, you know, to have a teacher saying he kills fascists or who he deems as fascists is quite significant. So now there is a new update for this teacher. Our friend Alicia Perkins over at OSD Rescue publishing this article, highly recommend you go read it on her OSD Rescue Substack, swept aside. Olympia teacher accused of sexual harassment. Parents say internal handling of student claims is insufficient. So I'm going to read a little bit from her reporting on this for you. So she says, Mr. Akiyama has allegedly received at least two formal complaints of misconduct in a sexual harassment manner with students. Two separate reports have very similar claims. In 2023, an Olympia High School parent and local educator who has worked with hundreds of students reported Mr. Akiyama for sexual harassment after a student confided in her. The educator says she reported to the student's counselor at the time that Mr. Akiyama was engaging in flirtation, special treatment, and comments about the way this student looked in a sexual nature. According to this educator, she followed up with a student to see how the report was handled, and the student claimed that her counselor basically advised her to brush it off with no further action. Interesting. So the article goes on to say about this Olympia High School teacher, Ryan Akiyama. On June 3rd of this year, another formal complaint about Mr. Akiyama was sent to Matt Grant, principal of Olympia High School, by a student's mother. The student herself also issued a formal complaint to her school counselor and to the district administration. The allegations against Mr. Akiyama included repeated comments about the student's appearance and cleavage, rating her on a scale of 1 to 10, preferential treatment, and one-on-one conversations about Mr. Akiyama's nicknames, Freakiyama and Diddyama. So those seem like very similar accusations from two different students about being creepy. That's their accusation, basically being creepy, preferential treatment, making comments to them about their appearance, in this case, their cleavage, and talking to them, this girl, allegedly one-on-one, about the fact that he has two nicknames, Freakiyama and Diddyama. That's some sick, disturbing stuff, if true. So Alicia Perkins goes on to write, an internal investigation into the sexual harassment claims against Mr. Akiyama was opened by OSD, and he was placed on an undefined leave. However, the family says they still had not received any updates as promised by the district by September 2nd, the day before school was set to start. Regarding the investigation against him for sexual harassment, here's the kicker. Mr. Akiyama is allegedly claiming to be a victim of right-wing parents conspiring against him. And Nicole, while I'm doing this, can you look quick? He was fired from his previous job at a high school, right? He was in... No, it was a different one. It was, I swear he was fired from a previous job before he went to this particular... If my memory serves me correctly, if you can... I'm almost 100% sure. He was pushed out of a previous job and then into this job. And then he makes these controversial comments. And he says, according to Alicia Perkins and her sourcing on this, which she's deeply sourced in the Olympia School District and with parents, that this is all parents and students conspiring against him to make up these allegations because they're right wing and because maybe they don't like that he has social media posts saying, you know, this teacher kills fascists. So then parents decided to have their teen girls make up, I think it was Yelm, make up
Well, he was
allegations that he sexually harassed them.
He did work for Yelm.
Yeah,
he was a principal there. He had a DUI. I'm not sure. Oh, that was
it.
Fired.
That was it. Yeah, he had a DUI, and so he, I don't know if he was fired or resigned or pushed out of the Yelm school district. Shows up in the Olympia school district, post nonsense like this teacher kills fascists, how he's a proud woke educator, and now he's saying that the sexual harassment, two credible sexual harassment allegations against him that are very similar in nature, are coming from right wing teenage girls, like right wing, the right wing parents. In retribution and to try to push him out of the district. And these are the people who are around our kids. Maybe you should have fired him after he showed that he's completely unhinged and can't be trusted around other people's kids because he holds up signs saying he kills people. He kills fascists. And we know from his previous social media posts that fascists are basically MAGA Trump supporters. And can you imagine a school looking at that at the time and thinking, oh, it's fine to have these kind of death threats against conservatives? People who you deem as fascists. You know, like we have a bunch of those around in Olympia. Again, they think like their whole student body and all the parents are a monolith. So yeah, we're going to hold, like, he can keep teaching after that. Well, now he's accused of being a total pervert with teen girls. So the Olympia School District gets what it allows. And it allows insane leftist lunatics to work on their staff. And if you're willing to do stuff as unhinged as he is, maybe not a surprise that now you have him also acting allegedly inappropriate with students. It's just ridiculous. We have no standards. No standards in our public school system. And we wonder why enrollment is down, attendance is down, and test scores are down, despite what the superintendent of public instruction claims. All right, coming up next, pat yourselves on the back, you guys. We have the highest gas prices in the nation yet again. Wow, those environmental policies are really paying off, aren't they? We'll have that first. October is going to be here before we know it. And I do not want you to miss the fun that we're going to have at the Engage Conference at the Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue, October 22nd and 23rd. I'm going to be hosting a panel with my friend Jonathan Cho about housing policy in the state of Washington, rent control. And also, I know that we're going to get into, you know, some of the issues with low barrier, low income housing that's been popping up and some of the crime related to it and all of that. We're going to touch on everything, homelessness, all that stuff. So make sure you sign up. You can go to rhawa.org, rhawa.org. And while you're there, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, make sure you sign up to become a member of RHA. It really is a no-brainer. I mean, it's like $260 a year. They help you navigate this insane climate that we're in around rules and laws and regulations. And you don't want to be going it alone out there in the wild west of housing in the state of Washington. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org. All right, gosh, what better time, you know? Kids are back to school. You're driving them to and fro to all their school and various activities. Really great time for families, for Washington State to have the highest gas prices in the nation. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. And this might be one of those opportunities. So according to AAA, right now, Washington has the highest gas prices in the nation. We're usually third. We're usually behind California and Hawaii. Not today, though. Our average gas price, $4.66. I'm going to round up. Three decimal points. $4.66. California is $4.65. Hawaii is $4.48. And Oregon is $4.30. Why is this? Is this just random, you know, the ebb and flow? And occasionally, you know, last summer, you'll remember for the first time ever, it never happened before that Washington State had the highest gas prices in the nation. And for a short period of time last summer, we were also number one. What is the consistent theme? Why is this happening out of, you know, nowhere after years of never being the highest gas prices in the nation? Now, two summers in a row, we have taken home that prize. Well, as you guys well know, because you listen to a show that tells you the truth, it is because of the carbon auctions. It's because of the Climate Commitment Act that voters were duped into not repealing last November. And what happened just a couple weeks ago? Well, they had another one of their carbon auctions. And whenever the carbon auctions happen, which is a part of the Climate Commitment Act, polluters have to go and buy these credits, carbon credits at auction. And depending on the demand, the price of them can go very, very high. And then what happens? Well, the price gets passed along to you and I. This is from Center Square. Latest carbon auction raises $446 million as Washington experiences highest gas prices in the nation. So their most recent carbon auction brought in an estimated $446 million, according to results released by the Department of Ecology. The September 3rd auction sold its nearly 6.4 million allowances at a settlement price of $64.30. So what does that mean? Well, for that, we always rely on our friend Todd Myers with the Washington Policy Center, who predicted before the Climate Commitment Act actually went into effect a couple years ago, almost to the penny, how much the auctions would raise gas prices, while Governor Jay Inslee was saying, oh no, the CCA won't increase gas prices. That's just a right-wing talking point. So Todd Myers puts this into numbers we can understand, which is basically like, okay, the how much a metric ton of CO2 goes for in these auctions doesn't mean jack to us, to the layperson, but how does that translate into the cost per gallon? So he says Washington's CO2 tax jumped 10% in just one quarter to $64.30 per metric ton of CO2. That amounts, because there's a simple mathematical equation, as he's pointed out all along, that amounts to about 51 cents per gallon of gas and about 62 cents per gallon of diesel. The tax has more than doubled in the last year. And then, of course, you put that on top of the fact that our gas prices, our gas tax, which we already have a huge gas tax in Washington state, just went up July 1st, 6 cents per gallon. So now we have a higher gas tax per gallon. And in the last year, the cost associated at the gas pump with the Climate Commitment Act has more than doubled. And that is a feature, not a bug. That's important to know. This isn't like all left up to chance, like, oh, you know, auction's really high. That is a feature, not a bug. Remember, this will get worse and worse and worse every year because it's designed to get worse every year. And that's what they wanted to hide from you and Jay Inslee. Oh, this won't raise gas prices. It was designed to raise gas prices. As the years go on, they will sell fewer carbon credits at auction because their goal is to reduce CO2 emissions. So the number of carbon credits up for sale will go down. And what happens as fewer are available? Basic supply and demand. The cost of them will shoot up. So the carbon credits will be more expensive. And then what happens? Your gas is more expensive. Your groceries are more expensive as a result. The cost of heating your home is more expensive. So that's a feature, not a bug. And really the only way to fix it, in my opinion, I know Todd Myers thinks there might be some things that Governor Ferguson could do to sort of alleviate some of this. I don't believe he'll do that. So to me, the only option is a repeal of the CCA. And I don't know if Let's Go Washington or someone else is willing to give it another try. Maybe if this becomes a normal thing where it's not just a blip that, oh, we have the highest gas prices in the nation for like a week here and there. What happens if we consistently trade place with California and we always have the highest gas prices in the nation? What happens if gas is consistently above $5 a gallon or $6 a gallon? Because as the carbon credit auctions continue and they start to peel back the number that people can buy, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility in a couple years to have routinely over $6 a gallon for gasoline. So is there a breaking point for Washingtonians? Is there a breaking point where they're willing to look through and capable of looking through the lies and gaslighting about the climate policies and say, no, this isn't the bill of goods that you sold us. It's not doing anything to improve the environment. 11% of the billions of dollars they've taken in from the Climate Commitment Act, only 11% is actually being spent on reducing carbon. A lot of it's going to government bureaucracy, to DEI programs in communities of color, and utter nonsense. So I don't know. You know what? Screw it. Let's do $10 a gallon for gasoline. Let's see if that, I know, I don't want that, obviously. But let's see if that's the trigger for people to wake up. At some point, people can't afford it. And I don't think Washington state government has planned for what will happen then. Or they have, and they don't want you to be able to drive a car. And then you'll have to bike. I'll have to bike 30 miles to work every day. Not quite 30 miles. That's a little 20 miles to work every day.
Yikes.
Which, you know, is doable. I did get, I'm very green these days. I got an electric bike. Beam, 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 broom.
Oh, that's true. That would be kind of fun.
It goes 19 miles an hour.
During the summer, it would be fun. during the winter, maybe.
Yeah,
not
so much. Not so much. But they don't care. They don't care what you're going to do when gas is too high to afford. They genuinely do not care.
Remember when they were giving us all those credit? Like, oh, don't worry, we'll take care of your energy bill.
Just this one time before the election.
Right.
And we'll tell you that it was paid for with money from the Climate Commitment Act. It literally bribed people into voting to keep it. Jack. Yeah. Jack Wagons. I'm trying not to name call. Asshats, though. Total asshats. Anyway, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our, I'm sure, Future 42 loves me calling people asshats in their sponsored segment. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, coming up next, we'll get to some national news. We now know where Trump is sending the National Guard next. And I guess it kind of makes sense, right? Although I don't know. There's a lot of other places that maybe could use it. First, a lot happening globally with the markets. So new trade deals affecting global markets, the uncertainty of AI, these new digital coins. If you're confused by it all, is it just time to get back to basics? If you're asking yourself that, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham and join his Back to Basics live webinar that's happening October 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. The webinar will be a frank discussion on the basics of fundamentals of value investing, a perspective on the outlook for the remainder of 2025, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. Hear directly from Zach Abraham as he shares insights in this free Back to Basics webinar, October 2nd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. Register right now, knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. It was funny, my mom did one of these webinars, and then she decided to move her retirement portfolio over to Bulwark, and they were sort of, when they saw it, they were like, wow, we wish you'd come to us years ago. You know, because I think a lot of people, and she was one of them, just had it and kind of a set it and forget it, and it wasn't being actively managed. So she was sort of beating herself up. But I'm like, Mom, better late than never. Better late than never. You got to get that. That's selfish, right? You know, one day. Oh, I shouldn't even say that.
Don't.
Well, it's, you know.
Spend it. Spend it.
Spend it,
Sandy.
Mom. Spend it. I don't need it. I don't need it. Spend it, Sandy. I hope you make a ton of money. I hope you make a ton of money. All right. Why did I even bring that up? Let's get to national news. Trump is sending the National Guard to Memphis. And so Memphis has a Democratic mayor, and it sounds like the mayor of Memphis is on board with it because their crime issue has been out of control. Now, they have, it's a red state. They have a Republican governor. So I think it's interesting. And, you know, there are some Republican areas that have crime issues as well. The Associated Press, Trump says he'll send National Guard to Memphis, escalating his use of troops in U.S. cities. Okay, but if Memphis wants him there, is it an escalation? So because when he sent the National Guard to LA, the whole thing was, oh, he's taking over. This is a federal takeover. And they made that, you know, assertion with DC because Muriel Bowser wanted to work together, didn't want him to actually take over the police department. And so he does it in a way where it's not a takeover and they're still mad about it. There's nothing he can do that the media will be happy with.
I do think it. I mean, I can see how they can refer to it as an escalation, but yeah, they are asking, so they can't get too angry. But
no.
But I do think he's trying to make the case. So if he does it here, then he can be like, "How can you not want me to do this?"
Or maybe he doesn't.
Else?
I don't know what. Maybe I read that wrong because I was just the Hill says that Memphis mayor is certainly not happy about Trump National Guard deployment. Okay, so maybe I was misinformed on that.
Well,
maybe
I thought, but I don't know. I heard the mayor. I mean, Trump said the mayor was on board. Here we have audio.
Oh yeah. So let's play what President Donald Trump said about it.
We're going to Memphis. Memphis is
that's the next city
deeply troubled, and the mayor is happy. He's a Democrat mayor. The mayor is happy, and the governor, Tennessee, the governor is happy. Deeply troubled. We're going to fix that just like we did Washington. So I'm just announcing that now, and we'll straighten that
National
out.
National Guard,
Okay. And anybody else we need. And by the way, we'll bring in the military too if we need it.
All right, so here is the mayor's response. Memphis Mayor Paul Young, a Democrat, refuted President Trump's claim that he's happy about the president's plan to deploy the National Guard to the Tennessee city in the coming days. He said, "I'm certainly not happy about it. The authority to call the National Guard lies with the governor and the president." So he kind of has no choice because the governor of the state, if he wants Trump there, then he can allow him to do it. And so, as mayor, my goal is to make sure that if they are indeed coming, that we have an opportunity to drive some of the decisions around how they engage in our community. And I think that's fair, honestly. You know, maybe you should have been doing a better job. So I'm not really sure how good your decision making is going to be on how we should deploy law enforcement resources to crack down on crime, because you've done a real bang up job of that so far. But, you know, best case scenario, it should be a cooperative relationship. I just wish that these mayors, just for the sake of politics, wouldn't push back against it and would welcome some extra help. Like, can we just look at it that way? You know, instead of him coming in and forcing his way in, let's look at it as extra help. And maybe if you were like, yeah, Mr. President, we have a crime crisis. We would love some help. Can we talk about the ways that we can best collaborate? But they won't do that because they can't be seen as collaborating with Orange Man Bad, even if it could save lives. And I had done so many rants on this about, you know, the Homeland Security and ICE agents and all this arresting like these prolific drug traffickers and deporting them from the country. And cities can't even celebrate that. You can't even celebrate that. Can't even celebrate drug traffickers, child rapists, murderers being taken off the street, which makes the streets more safe and the job of your law enforcement officers more safe. They can't celebrate anything if Trump is involved. And that's a disappointment, because I think collaboratively, we could actually have a lot of cities that could finally get their individual crime crisis under control, but because it involves Donald Trump, they're not happy about it. So I guess Trump is prone to fibbing a little bit. So
or he is. The mayor is saving face right there, because he's still got to protect his job, and he can't tell like all of his Democratic supporters that he was happy with what Trump's doing.
So you think behind the scenes he welcomes
yes.
it?
Yes. He was like, yeah, sure.
I'm sure, in. Whatever. Can't get any worse than it already is. So we'll see how he does in Memphis, because D.C.'s looking good, but cautious. Word of caution. We've seen many a crackdown on crime in Seattle. Not so much in the last 5 years, but we covered a lot of emphasis patrols and things like that. They happened for a short period of time. As soon as they were gone, everything came back. So that's the same thing will happen in D.C. if there isn't a consistent effort to try to keep crime under control. Breathe. I did a live Q&A last night. My throat, I had this itch, tickle. And it's gone now. But okay. Just during the Q&A, as soon as the Q&A was done, I was fine. The whole Q&A, I was like choking up a storm. Anyway.
Oh, geez.
So, you know, speaking of these blue cities that won't accept help from the federal government, despite the depths of what they're going to, I'm going to play a video. It's heartbreaking. I have blurred it to high heaven so that it's indistinguishable. But Kevin Dahlgren, who works with the homeless down in Portland, was walking and saw a very clearly deceased person. And here's a little clip.
So right in front of me is a dead body. Clutching in his left hand is foil. So this is very clearly a fentanyl overdose. What's also really crazy is hundreds of people have walked by the last hour because we're waiting on emergency services and they've yet to show. And so this person has been completely motionless, and it's like literally nobody has noticed. This is just another tragic, tragic death on the streets of Portland, which in my opinion could have been prevented.
And this is the bottom of humanity. And in a city like Portland, and I can't, again, I have to blur it a lot because we do stream the show on YouTube, but I've got a couple still images here I can show you. This guy's frozen, like in real time, again with tinfoil in his hand, and I cropped out his face, obviously. It's horrifying. And he's very clearly dead. When you see the image from the front, he's very clearly dead. And I've seen people deceased from overdoses before in my reporting duties. And then you see people just walking by because they are so used to this sight of people who appear dead. Because I'll tell you what, I mean, you know, one of the first overdoses I saw, I came up on it with police. We were doing a ride along and I thought for sure the person was dead, and they Narcan'd him and they came right back to life. But somebody who's overdosing looks dead. They do. And so these people in Portland, who so many of them are voting for these politicians who have these harm reduction policies that are just killing people. And they say it's because of empathy, and they think that they're like the party and the voters of empathy, and they can just walk past that on the streets. And I think, and first let me play something that Kevin said once. So police finally show up, and it's just so sad. But I mean, it takes more than an hour. Here you've got someone who's saying, hey, there's a dead body on the sidewalk in downtown Portland. And there's so much going on, so few police. This happens so frequently that it takes more than an hour for police to show up. Here's a video again from Kevin.
We've been here for about an hour waiting on emergency services. And they finally arrived. So, we find bodies all the time on the streets. We also find people overdosing. This is a request to start checking on people more, checking on them before they die. I don't know the whole story with this, but the fact is there's so many people out here who are in just desperate need for help and are not getting it. And I believe just being a part of the public, we should just start checking on people, stop ignoring them. We are become numb to this crisis, and that's the wrong thing to do, because we start just walking over them and ignoring them and looking up and not down, and that's just not okay. So start checking on people, checking on their welfare, asking them their name, and just finding out more about them. And I strongly believe just doing that more is going to start saving people.
So I understand the sentiment, and I don't seem to sound cold-hearted, but I do disagree with that idea. And there's a couple reasons why. It's dangerous. I would never suggest to anybody who doesn't do it for a living, I mean, Kevin's been doing that for a long time, to like go tap someone on the shoulder who's like down on 3rd and Pine. I don't even want you down there. It's not even safe. But the other thing is, how much does Portland spend per year, per budget cycle, to deal with this? Remember, it was like $780 million. $70,000 per homeless person or something like that. No, it was more than that. It was like some crazy figure per homeless person. Almost $1 billion. And you're telling me that there aren't people we're paying on the streets who are supposed to do what Kevin just suggested we do? You're telling me with the nearly $1 billion a year, you don't have enough to make sure that there are outreach workers doing that, checking on people, connecting them to services, noticing that for hours, this guy has been sitting there like a stone statue, deceased? And it has to be up to us or to Kevin? Then what the hell are we paying nearly $1 billion a year for? You're telling me the system can't deal with that? You're telling me the system can't prevent that? Then we have a big problem, but that is the problem. The system isn't designed to prevent it. The system is designed to cause it. What do you want to bet that the tinfoil he has in his hand came from some sort of harm reduction kit? The homeless industrial complex and the drug industrial complex is designed to keep people in addiction, because that's how you keep the money coming in. So no, it shouldn't be up to you and I. We pay taxes for a reason. And way more taxes than we should be toward the homeless industrial complex. To have people who can go and offer outreach to individuals who are suffering on the streets. And if you're telling me that they're not up to the task, then why are you still taking our money? It's just so much encapsulated in that one video. Toxic empathy. Suicidal and, dare I say, homicidal empathy. You're loving them to death. And at the same time saying, we don't want Donald Trump here to help us fight crime and disorder and clean up our cities. Give me a break. It's disgusting. It's genuinely disgusting. All right, we have an update from the Magnolia School District on their decision not to fly the flags at half staff. We'll have that coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, maybe you're moving out of state, bless you, or maybe you're just moving across the street, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Wes has been doing this for a long time. He is the guy in this market who you want helping you sell your home, and he's going to walk hand in hand with you. Maybe not literally if it makes you uncomfortable, but I'm sure he would if you felt like you needed someone to hold your hand because selling your home is just that stressful. He's a really nice guy. But he's been doing this for a long time. He's been through all the crazy market ups and downs, and so he knows how to navigate them. And he's also going to be honest with you every step of the way, give you an honest assessment of your home's value, talk about his strategy for where he thinks you need to price your home. And that it is strategic. Strategy plays a lot into that. And then right now, there's actually a lot of homes on the market, so he's going to talk about his plan for making sure that your home stands out, that the listing stands out, that you get more feet in the door, more offers on the table. And he's going to, you know, he wants to be a partner with you in it. He's not just going to take over and say, hey, we got to come in, we got to do these updates, all of this. He wants to make sure that you're part of the process every step of the way, because it is such a big thing. But start by going to sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com, use their home value calculator right there on the website to see how much your home is worth. Might be worth more than you think. And then reach out to Wes for a free market analysis. He'll tell you how homes are are performing in your area, kind of set your expectations, and then you can move forward from there. Sellwithwest.com. Sellwithwest.com. It just is a better way to sell your home. All right, let's see. So Magnolia Elementary School that refused, allegedly, according to parents, to fly flags at half staff in honor of Charlie Kirk. Here's what they told Nicole. Thank you for reaching out. The issue you have brought forth was not intentional. The custodial staff that's in charge of handling the flags was out of the building when the directive came down, so the request was not seen until it returned today. The directive from the governor asked that flags remain at half staff until close of business or sunset on Sunday, September 14th, 2025. There was no ill intent behind the missed request, according to Teresa Shaw, the assistant communications manager for that particular school. Do you believe them?
I believe there may have been. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Maybe my hearing's off.
There was no ill intent. I believe somebody probably, it was brought to somebody's attention and they just didn't do anything about it.
So that's at Magnolia Elementary School. Yeah. Is it just the one person? Because over the weekend, parents were pointing it out.
Yes. Yeah. The letter we were sent was sent to them before it was sent to us. So I believe it probably was, or, you know, brought to their attention and just nothing was done about it.
Yeah. Okay. But, well, that's what they say. Whatever. You know, that's why we reach out to people for comment. So believe it or don't believe it. I don't really know how we prove it one way or the other. All right. Do we want to do the show poll first or comments? Probably the show poll.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So I asked you guys, this was required you to be very introspective, and I will be introspective with you. I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, to what extent do you believe you personally contribute to division? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Wow.
Not at all, a little, or a lot? Nicole.
Wow.
I know the answer for you.
Well, I would say that our intent is to settle the division and kind of bring, humanize the viewpoints when somebody from the other side thinks that, you know, all these viewpoints are the other side is evil and here's all these things. And I think that you and I are constantly trying to humanize the perspective of the other side.
That's very nice.
And I'm putting that in quotes, the other side, right?
The crazy side.
Yeah.
We're not talking left versus right, red versus blue. We're talking reasonable versus unreasonable.
Right. Exactly.
We're on the side of people who are reasonable.
Reasonable.
And if you're unreasonable, you're on the other side.
Right. But we're always trying to, you know, make it make sense.
Okay.
And so in my personal life and professional life, I would say I'm always trying to calm those. So I typically try to calm people when they try to get in arguments with me based on what I do for a living. Mm-hmm. I'm very calm and I typically shut them down.
So you would say not at all?
I would say I try not to. So I would say, no, I would not say not at all. That's not realistic. So I would say a little.
I would say a little too. The left would say I contribute to it a lot.
A lot.
But disagreement is not division.
No.
Me having different beliefs than you is not inherently divisive. If you feel like it is, that's a you problem. Now, do I occasionally get on the show and get a little unhinged?
Riled up.
Absolutely. So I would say a little. You know, I can acknowledge that.
A little. We can all acknowledge that we're all human and things we get passionate about certain topics.
Oh, last week, man, and I was privately seething. Let's see. We're
privately.
Well, I tried to be less seething on the show. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Nicole. Yes. I don't do anything private. Let's see. We're pretty split, but 60% saying not at all. I don't contribute to political division at all. About 40% saying a little, and 2% saying a lot. I feel like I know all of our viewers well enough to kind of know which ones probably clicked a lot. By the way, I'm not able to see individually how you voted on polls. I'm just able to see the final result. Becky said, I answered not at all, but according to others, because I have a differing opinion, some consider it to be infuriating. Even though I allow them to have their opinion, I am not allowed to have my own. And that applies to both far right and far left. Yeah, very much so. Shirley Lopez, as a believer in Jesus Christ, the most divisive person in history, I can't help but be divisive. Truth is divisive. If you speak it, you will cause division. That said, we must be kind and loving when we speak and remember that God loves everyone he created, no matter how unlovely. That's a nice way of putting it. Kevin, at first I was thinking a little, but after reflecting on this, I said not at all, because in this state, we are so left that any discussion that is different from the majority is perceived as divisive, even if being honest and telling your true thoughts is perceived as mean and hateful. See, that's the issue. And I agree with that. Again, not, having an opinion is not divisive. You know, I think a lot of it isn't how you communicate that opinion. But, you know, of course, as most of you have, I've been watching a ton of Charlie Kirk clips that have been on social media. And, you know, one of the things that he would say to specifically transgender people who would come and try to debate him at these events is, you know, do you lie to people you love? Because they would say, you know, talk about it's hateful, basically, to not affirm someone's identity. And he said, I wouldn't lie to someone I love. And like, I love all of God's creatures. And I don't think that lying to people is kindness. And you might find that divisive, but I'm telling the truth. You know, a man can't be a woman can't be a man. Let's see, Spark of Pierre. I'm an alcoholic in recovery since 2021. All or nothing thinking is a frequent effect of alcoholism. Another almost universally is the damn the torpedo selfishness. Divisiveness was my domain. What I said, what I wrote, the forgotten birthdays, the cruel practical jokes, ignoring holiday get-togethers, losing my job, getting divorced. I own all of that. I never murdered anyone. That's likely the only commandment I haven't broken. But it was the powerful combination of Christ and AA that turned my life around. In all my 49 years of escalating addiction, I rarely ever thought I was wrong. I didn't listen to my wife. I didn't listen to my boss. I couldn't see a better way. Here's my point. I'm convinced that secular ideology can be just as blindingly powerful as alcoholism, especially for those who haven't found something deeper and more meaningful to guide them. Charlie's death was a wake-up call for my new wife, for countless others, and for me. I've written about it before, but his assassination hit like a slap in the face. Charlie showed us what it means to sacrifice time, comfort, even life itself for others. He valued his own life less than the message he was driven to deliver for our sake. Through that sacrifice, Charlie challenged and inspired countless Christians to give more of ourselves and to do more with the time we've been given on this earth. There will be a prayer vigil this Thursday where we live, and we've warned that it may not be safe to attend. My wife and I accept Charlie's challenge. I think that was a nice comment. I wanted to read the whole thing. Carenza, mostly I just can't seem to understand the other side's thinking. Yeah, good luck with that one. And I don't think you have to. You know, some of it, you just... there's nothing to understand. And I'm sure there's some views that we hold that they feel like I can't possibly understand that as well. Let's read a couple more. Gretchen VB. I'm a counselor primarily working with teens and try to get them to think for themselves and question the information they're getting. They all come in with the same 5 bullet points, and I try to get them to question both sides of the issue. All right. Slim Jakey says, I pretty much stir the pot on both sides of the aisle, especially when whiskey is involved. Very honest. Well, very honest. Yes. But, you know, if we really want political violence to end, I think it's healthy for us to reflect on what our contributions are. Maybe we spend less time on the internet. And I say that knowing that I rely on you being on the internet to make a living. So, you know, don't give up the internet entirely, please. All right. We'll get to some comments on other things from the show today. On teachers' unhinged reactions to Charlie Kirk's death, Brandon and Becca said, hate feeds hate. Bothell principal is receiving death threats. We need to keep people accountable, but not spew violent or hateful rhetoric. Rise above and keep the moral high ground. Yeah, it's so counterproductive. It's so counterproductive. Like, you know, for instance, if right-wingers show up and they want to attack Antifa. Well, now we've lost the moral high ground, and now, you know, everybody's on the same plane. And that's just not, that's not productive. You know, I was thinking about it with some of these Charlie Kirk vigils. You know, if left-wingers show up and they, I saw one like stomping through one of the vigils, crushing things and kicking things. You know, reacting with violence is not the answer. I think they subdued him until police arrived or something, but they didn't beat him senseless. So you don't want to lose the moral high ground, because right now, frankly, you have it. And that would be a good thing to keep. Moon Goddess, $5 super chat. Thank you. Left's losing jobs. It's called karma. As for their comments, a penny for their thoughts seems a little pricey. And I'm happy that people are finally taking the red pill. Yeah. And look, cancel culture is a real thing. But that's like you being canceled for holding a, you know, an opinion that is not dangerous or horrible, like masking. Remember how many people were canceled during the pandemic for speaking out about masking and mandates and shutdowns, and they were being doxxed on the internet and all that stuff? That's cancel culture.
Or like the Bud Light thing. So you have you have a sponsor or a representative that you don't like, so you stop buying that beer. That's cancel culture. You don't like what the company does, so you...
No, that's not cancel culture. Well, that's economics.
Well,
what I'm saying is, like,
but it is an element of cancel culture, because you're going in saying, I don't support this brand and their decisions, right?
But you're not going into the stores and ripping Bud Light off the shelves and saying no one else can buy it either. So that's not cancel culture to me. When you
but you're going to destroy the company if everybody...
Well, individually, the free markets, right? But what I'm saying is, like, when people are doxxed and, you know, for instance, like, let's say that you opined that men can't be women. Like, that is just a fact, right? That's not a contemptible position to have. It's just a fact. And so if people were to dox you and call your job and say, this person's a transphobe, I mean, how many times have I been called a transphobe? That's cancel culture. But when you're espousing something that's universally contemptible, like celebrating an assassination, like somebody being shot, and you're a teacher in a school, that's not cancel culture. That's your boss deciding that
they don't want
you're a liability to their business. So there is a difference here. There's a lot of different shades, and people want to chalk it up to cancel culture. But no, I don't think you personally deciding, like, hey, I'm not going to buy this product because I don't believe in what the company stands for.
I don't think
that's cancel culture.
I think the result of it can be. Mm. Like, if you go after a company, I mean, you don't think what happened with the Dylan thing, like, you don't think that was an element of cancel culture?
Nope.
Really?
Not at all. Huh. Not at all, because people made... Now, like I said, if they were out there storming the Bud Light factory...
People were out there smashing Bud Light, posting videos
and
shooting...
But they bought. Like, Kid Rock was shooting up... He bought them. They weren't going into stores, destroying entire stockpiles.
Right, but, like, people in big... Like, you know, Kid Rock, somebody with that kind of, you know, status is saying, don't buy this anymore, and then people are not buying it anymore. Like, I don't know. I think there's an element of your influencing people's opinion because of an opinion of you know... I mean, I agreed with it because I thought it was ridiculous.
I'm surprised you think that's cancel culture.
Well, I think it's an element of it. I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I understand what you're pointing fingers at as as cancel culture, but I also think that this is kind of an element. Now, I don't think all cancel culture is bad. That's what I'm saying. Like, that was absolutely worthy of being canceled. Yeah. Sorry, Bud Light. Like, that's what you get. But it is an element of it. I don't know. It's a branch of it somehow.
Yeah, I mean, free speech, but not without consequence. But if, like, people say something you disagree with, and so you set out to ruin their life, that's cancel culture.
Well, that's in the doxing of, like, you are full-blown doxing and everything that comes along with it. So that's a branch of cancel culture.
You know
what?
Maybe cancel culture can't be easily defined.
Because it is a cultural thing right now, right?
Yeah.
So that I do think that is something that did not exist 15 years ago even.
Yeah.
And it is something that has, like, many branches right now. And there is these crazy elements of it.
100%. Anyway. All right. Wah hitting the highest gas price in the nation. Matt M., as much as I hope this is a wake-up for the vote blue no matter who, folks, I doubt it will be. I do too. Todd Welch, as long as your nightly local news does not seriously look at and report on the negative impact of the CCA, no change will occur. 100%. The media is responsible for making sure that people know the truth. And look how long it took them to even call out Jay Inslee for just flat-out lying that it wouldn't raise gas prices. It took forever.
I just saw this headline. And this is nationally from Fox. Gasoline's burden on Americans' wallets is the lightest since 2005. But if nobody in Washington State hears that, because that is not the Washington State story. But if nobody hears that in Washington State and everybody's like, oh, geez, I thought gas prices would go down by now from the summer.
Yeah.
But it's not.
They're probably blaming Trump.
Yeah. And they've only gone up. Yeah. And I guarantee they're blaming Trump.
Oh, 100%.
Absolutely. Oh, but nationwide, they're the lowest since 2005.
Yeah.
But nobody here knows that. Nobody here feels that.
Nope. I guarantee they're blaming Trump. And it'll be a matter of time before Bob Ferguson has a presser blaming Trump about it.
Wild.
Too. Vote liberty. In some parts of the state, one will have to bike to school in the snow, just like Grandpa did. Uphill both ways. Hey, we legit in Minnesota had to dig ourselves out of our house and some people snowmobiled to school because they never canceled school for snow. You would open the door and it would be a wall of snow and you'd have to.
I know. And you know the excuse here. but we don't have very much snow, so we don't have the money to pay for the snowplow.
Oh, and there's hills, which is true. I lived on Queen Anne Hill for 10 years.
Well, I
know. You weren't getting off Queen Anne Hill.
But there are lots of places with hills, but you like you just have the equipment. But we're like, oh, we can't buy the equipment, but we can pay for all this other crap that we don't need.
Yeah, it's priorities. Trump sending the guard to Memphis. AOS, brilliant play. Get a Democrat mayor to gauge the assistance once it's done, which then puts the defiant Dem mayors in the position to have to deny proven action right in front of their constituents. Yeah, but they're doing it already in D.C. It's undeniable how good D.C. looks compared to a couple weeks ago, but still they're having protests in the streets. You know, it's just crazy. Necro says Democrat leadership likes the crime because it boosts the numbers they need for more money from their donors. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's do two random super chats. Sauce, $20 for common sense. Thanks. Denise, $5 for cough drops because you still need to do the live chats. Yeah, I feel bad. I was so, you know, when you just get a tickle. And you can't get the tickle out. And then I had this radio interview I had to do after the live Q&A with our friends at Outlaw Radio Network. And I told them, I was like, we've got to make this short because I have this tickle in my throat. It won't go away. And then I got on and it was gone. It was gone. I was like, how is that possible?
Honey.
Honey.
You need to have honey well, on standby.
People were saying it was because I wasn't drinking. Usually I drink on our live Q&As. I have at least like a whiskey. And they were like, you should have had that because that probably would have helped.
Would have helped.
So, all right, we've got a great closing sanity check from someone I didn't even know was reasonable. What? Usually most actors are like unhinged leftists.
How have you missed that?
I don't know, but now I know.
He's very well known for being reasonable, and he's from here, you know that?
I didn't know that either.
What?
I know like nothing. Steven. How do I even have a show? Yeah. I know nothing. So we'll have a closing sanity check from a hunky actor. Sorry, honey. He is hunky, but you are too. First, make sure you take some time now that kids are back in school. This is the craziness of the summer is done to take the First Mark Challenge. You guys, you could be saving thousands of dollars a year. I can lead a horse to water. I can't make you drink. But who would not want to save thousands of dollars a year on their insurance, especially when, one, they could support one of our wonderful advertisers in the process, but two, it's so easy. All you do, firstmarkinsurance.com, schedule time to take the First Mark Challenge, and there's a couple benefits to it. You learn so much about your insurance needs and how the insurance industry works, so it's almost like this little mini like training session, which to me was really insightful because I think insurance is so confusing. So you go through your current insurance with them, talk about your insurance needs. They go out, they shop the market of carriers for you. They come back with their recommendations and they want to make sure a few things, that you have the insurance you need, right? They want to make sure you're properly covered. None of this cheap fly-by-night stuff. They want to make sure you're properly covered. They want to make sure you're not paying for something you don't need, which also happens a lot. And then they want to make sure that you have the best price. So they're going to come back with their recommendations. And for a lot of Undivided viewers and listeners who are now members of the First Mark family, they save hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a year, just by making that simple phone call and taking the First Mark Challenge. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. So Chris Pratt's from here, huh?
Yeah, he graduated from Lake Stevens and he still has a farm on the islands.
Interesting. You know, it's hard for me with Chris Pratt because he was on The Office, right? Was it The Office or was it Parks and Rec?
Parks and Rec, yeah.
And he was sort of like a bumbling fool on that show. And then he turned into like a sex symbol. Like overnight, right? He just, you know, toned up a little bit. Then he was like, then he was
ever a bumbling fool. He acted like a bumbling fool.
Well, that's what I mean. His character, not him.
I think everybody knew he was a... But this
somehow, this somehow came across my timeline. I didn't know. Is he conservative or is he just religious?
Very religious. I believe leans conservative, but I don't know that he is super vocal about it. I think he's conservative.
So this just came across my timeline. I don't know how. I try not to follow celebrity anything. And it was such a breath of fresh air. And it led me to immediately change my screen time social media behavior. So here's this video from Chris Pratt.
Lord, fill me with strength to turn my attention toward you, that I find rest and joy in your presence. Amen. Okay, now you can continue strolling or you can turn your phone off and go outside. Might I suggest the latter? Go get some sunshine. Go look at a tree, touch some grass, call a friend. If you've got time to be on your phone right now, you've got time to do your to-do list, and you've got time to reach out to somebody in need and share this prayer with them. Amen.
I love that. And I saw that and I'm like, you're right, Chris Pratt. I shouldn't be scrolling. I do have time to reach out to friends. I reached out to my friend who I'm going to see in Vegas this weekend, who I haven't seen in forever, a friend from high school, and I'm so excited. And I took the dogs for a walk. I didn't touch grass. But then I started, and you guys should start this. Start this tomorrow. The 1 hour rule in the morning. I did it just this morning. I read from a book about commies, so it sort of fired me up, but I read a little bit from a book, got some work done, took the dogs for a walk, 1 hour in the morning when you wake without any screen time, no TV, no screen, nothing. And I would say, Nicole, I'm in a pretty good mood today.
You are in a very great
mood. Usually I'm a sour bitch.
I'm very great.
Maybe it's screen time. So thank you, Chris Pratt. You're instilling positive change in my life, and I do appreciate it, sir. That has been today's Closing Sanity Check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Please become a paid subscriber to Undivided. That's how we function, and that's how we grow. And we do a lot of good content, like a subscriber Q&A I did yesterday. We do a weekly exclusive for subscribers on Sundays with subscribers. So you can be part of all of that in our growing community. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com, and click on the banner that says Support the Show. See you tomorrow, friends.